It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at JWright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening, you can do so over on the Odyssey app. We're also available on TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, as well as the SiriusXM app. Live streams rolling up over on YouTube, Twitch, and X. The Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. My bad.
It's okay. For those
that
are wondering
how you just cue it up, so I'm like, okay, yeah, we're ready to roll.
No, I did kind of fake you out where I backed up and whatnot. For those that are curious, if you're watching the BMW Championship on ESPN and then it went off to the Pat McAfee show, it is available on ESPN Unlimited, ESPN Plus through, I think, 2. And then I think live coverage will take over on Golf Channel at 2 o'clock. My company is yours each and every Thursday. I had to remember what day it was for just a second. He, of course, writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports, but not now because he's on paternity leave. He's on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, man. How you doing?
Oh, I am doing well. Went and sweated it out on Sunday.
Oh, at a Colonial? No.
Southwind.
Southwind. Yeah. Okay. Did you take the family or did you go solo?
Aaliyah and I went. We ran toss sweep with Josephine, my mom.
You really ruined a chance there for her to meet Bennett Scheffler. But actually, I'm fine with that you didn't bring her because my daughter is going to, I'm trying to set that up. Like, I don't know what that's going to look like. It probably means she's going to have to go to college in the state of Texas.
Well, but so it's funny because I mentioned your plan to Aaliyah because I want to be perfectly clear. I was on board.
I mean, they're a great family. You know, the inheritance is going to look good.
Correct.
You know, he's raised right.
Correct. There's no, could do much worse. But then Aaliyah was like, well, like, she'd probably have to go to SMU. And I was like, oh. I was like, well, I don't know if you've seen the price tag at SMU.
I know you're kind of an SMU hater. So I know that you don't respect.
Well, no, my whole thing is just why would you go to SMU when you could just go to Ole Miss? It's SMU with tuition.
Sometimes people who work in the Ole Miss admissions office then just go and get jobs at SMU. Like, that's not uncommon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the presidents one time went from, he got Ole Miss railroaded by the NCAA, and then he went straight to SMU.
Yeah, and then Lane Kiffin's ex-girlfriend followed
Correct.
The same.
Correct. There's a lot of overlap. But I also was pointing out to her, I was like, you know, Scotty and Meredith, like, they didn't grow up poor. They went to Highland Park, but they went to public school in Highland Park.
Okay. Well, that's like, you know.
No, I know, but also, he went to Texas and she went to A&M. Like, I'm not sure SMU, I don't think that they would view SMU as, like, that's where we really want our kids to go.
Well, they're
also
public school people.
You got to also remember, while Scotty doesn't really wear his feelings on his sleeve, I'm going to go out on a limb and just guess he's not the biggest Bryson fan.
Oh, right. So, you wouldn't want to send him to Bryson's alma mater.
Yeah.
No, not at all. You know, they're also pretty religious. So, I mean, there's a chance.
Well, it's a Methodist school.
What if Bennett goes to the Notre Dame of the Church of Christ, Pepperdine University? Then I think we're cooking with gas when it comes to your situation.
They're definitely not Church of Christ. If you made me guess, they're your tribesmen.
Baptist or
yeah.
Non-Dino?
I would actually think you could talk me into following the same path. Grew up Baptist, now non-dom, if you will.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, so maybe
Baylor.
Shoot. Yeah, I was going to say, maybe he ends up going to Baylor.
Baylor. Again, I didn't think it was the worst plan, especially after. I mean, I get it. They were standing right there in the window. That was like one of the more unbelievable examples of CBS just showing right where the family was staying.
Yeah, that was
like, it's never, that's always like one of those secrets that you hear about on the grounds, but it doesn't really get on the broadcast. And I get it. Their house backed up to the tee box at 18 and he waves to his family and they're in the window. But it's like, man, that was it's like, I wonder where they're staying.
A slight invasion of privacy. But then again, if Scotty is pretty out there with his family. In terms of superstar, like, athletes in this generation, I can't remember one who's just been more like, but I think it's part of his image. Nike probably encourages it. Like, hey, we're branding you as a family man. Always have, if you're going to win the tournament or be in contention, have your family there, right? Like, interact, bring your little boy in when you sign your scorecard so that everybody sees that moment on TV, right? Like, I'm not saying that he's not authentically a family man. I'm just saying that it's also very curated as well.
Nothing's by accident in this day and age. You know what I mean? And to your point, if they wanted to keep a low profile, it is possible.
Yeah.
Now, that it also probably, to your point, is it's something that he cares about and he wants it. It's something he wants to project because he's probably proud of it. But What I do think is interesting is it's like he's one of the few athletes that doesn't use his kids as shields. Like, now the new way to like show everyone you're a family man is after you play badly, bring your kids up to the podium.
So you don't get asked
Correct.
A tough question.
Yeah.
And get put in an awkward situation when your kid's up there.
Exactly.
It's like Trent Dilfer at UAB bringing his grandson up to the podium. And then
Shout out my guy. AK, we got a guy, I'll call him Slash. Head coach,
yeah,
Slash
the AD.
AD,
man. How about that?
I can't remember if it was a written. I don't remember if it was like a deep dive I read on Mark Ingram, not the football player, the former AD, or if I was listening to a show. But there was an anecdote, and it always stuck with me. Right after, so UAB had, remind me of the coach at ULM that's done a pretty good job.
Bryant Vincent. He's from Glasgow, Kentucky. Yeah.
And on top of that, he had been an assistant under Brown at UAB, desperately wanted the job. And Ingram looked at the Deion effect, and he decided, I'm going for the brand. And he goes and hires Trent Dilfer. Now, to be clear, I didn't think it was like the world's worst idea at the time, because he was coaching at Lipscomb and they had a lot of talent. He had also been running the Elite 11. And so I thought there was the chance of, okay, maybe you have some modern recruiting connections that not everyone would have. And at UAB, it's a tough job. I think you kind of have to do it a little differently. So I don't think that, like, on the surface, I didn't think it was a horrific idea. But then when you dug more into how seriously he did not treat the job, well, then it became a problem. But the anecdote was after Army, remember that Army game where Army like put up, I don't know, 50 or 60 on him?
Yeah, like they were surprised they ran the option.
Correct. There was a, and I use air quotes, big UAB booster, whatever that does or doesn't mean, that was on the sideline, and it was captured by the reporter. And he sees Ingram, and he's, I guess, just fuming. And he just turns and goes, great effing hire, dip S.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, what a dumpster fire. But also, dude, when you can safely land back at one of these Middle Tennessee private schools, I mean, the money is so good now as a head coach at a private high school, and the commitment, the time drain, so much less. Like, that's a pretty cush gig when you can fail miserably as a college head coach and then just go and get one of the top 100 high school jobs in America.
I think, isn't Kimry at Baylor?
Yeah. I mean, he was a former SEC position coach, and I bet he's making as much at Baylor. Coaching a five-star Tennessee commitment at running back. Coaching. Does Emmy West play Baylor this year?
Thank God, no.
Okay. How are y'all looking, by the way, tomorrow night? First season
opener, Bartlett, tomorrow. Pre-game will start at 6:45 on 790. The bet, kickoff at 7. I don't know. I logged into Huddle the last couple of nights to kind of familiarize myself with who's getting the ball and who's making the plays.
Y'all got any college prospects?
They all went to other schools.
Okay. So is that like in reality now? Like the best players, even at a place like MUS, are getting poached by other private schools?
Yeah.
Because of they're being offered what? Like what is the?
So it varies case by case, but like 2 years ago, we lost a guy to Brentwood for a car and access to a nice house for the family.
And I assume you mean Brentwood Academy, right?
BA, sorry. Yeah. But it also annoys them to call them Brentwood, so I do it. One year we lost two guys to Collierville, one of which then wound up at Baylor. We lost at least a couple to...
Now, I can understand Brentwood Academy, but I can't understand, I guess, unless you just don't have the money to pay for MUS, like why you would then go to a public school. Like
I don't think the tuition was the issue, if you catch my drift.
I know there could be other issues there, so I won't ask too much. But I'm curious, like what if you're a high school football program? I understand it on the college level. You're a big time booster. You're a CEO. You own a company. Like you have generational wealth. Like the alma mater succeeding means a lot to you. Donating to the program to attract talent leads to better results for the program that is like near and dear to your heart. And like they play on ESPN in front of millions of people. There's 100,000 people in the state. Like I get that on a certain level. I don't understand it at the high school level though. Like why? Like why would you be so invested in high school football that you would give a kid a car to transfer schools across the state? Like I don't understand that. Like psychologically,
I think you talk yourself into it. It does not apply as much here, but let's use your Nashville example. They're all going after the same kids, so it's hyper competitive. And so I think what ends up happening is you view athletics as your front door, and it's kind of on a smaller scale to what college is. And so everybody wants to win. And then I think to a certain degree, it's kind of like, you know, I've always told you, college football, the boosters, it's like they have tons of money, but they don't have own an NFL team money. And honestly, now I don't even know. We're seeing billionaires that are getting priced out that can't afford the teams. We're now talking the only people that can afford these things are like sovereign wealth funds and massive, massive capital investment companies. Like that's who can afford it. And so I think it's kind
or
of
the, Joshua Kushner.
Well, but like there's also real questions where that money comes from. Like there's a legitimate possibility the Saudis have finally learned their lesson. You can sports wash, but do it dignified. Do it quietly.
Find you a nice American front.
Find man. You a nice front man and do it that way. Don't be as in your face about it. I mean, it's kind of like the Tropic Thunder joke. You know, don't go all the way. Forrest Gump, not all the way. But you can't go all the way in Simple Jack. It's kind of the same thing. Like in sports washing, it's like tastefully, please. You know,
if you're gonna cheat on the test, get a 92, not a 100.
Yeah, yeah. Once upon a time, I always respected. There was a giant scandal at MUS. Once upon a time, there was a junior English review, and they had an exam that was stolen, and some guys took the copy and made 97s. I always respected the guys that made sure they got just enough right for that, like, gentleman's 83, 84.
Don't want to raise any red flags.
Come on. Now, they still all got caught because it turned out the answer key was wrong. And, like, all missed the same question. This was a legendary moment in MUS lore. But I think there's, like, the people that can't afford NFL teams that love their school, well, Cody Campbell. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're all in on your texters. Or John Ruiz. I want my best friend to be the coach at Miami, and, like, we're going to be good. All right? So you do that. Then there's, like, I think this next level down where they have more money than you and I do, but they can't really – let's say they can't move the needle at SECU.
Yeah, a doctor or a dentist, yeah, who doesn't make a splash at the SEC school, but who can bankroll a
correct.
Yeah, okay.
And
bankroll
I always
a high school program instead.
What I've always thought is funny, though, and these are my favorite examples, and you're kind of starting to see this happen a little at Baylor and Macaulay. I always love when the bankroller, if you will, you know, bankroller's son's always going to have a spot. But then when they recruit so badly that all of a sudden there's not even a spot for bankroller son, and then they get pushed down. Like, that's kind of what's happening is Baylor and Macaulay have recruited so much that, like, the people that just went to the Baylor school or went to the Macaulay school and, like,
have... kids can't even make the team anymore.
Correct, and they're like, their parents are pissed.
Nationally. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
no. Cobb, internationally.
Yeah. Well, literally, I mean, those two schools you mentioned in Chattanooga, I mean, you go look at the tennis rosters, I bet they are...
Look at the football rosters.
Where are you getting international kids from to play football, though? That don't make any sense.
Oh, Canada.
Well, Marshall Manning playing high school football in the TSSAA this year. Freshman backup quarterback behind Keegan Croucher.
I can't wait till they recruit over him.
I don't know, man. I think he's pretty good. Like, I think he's legit.
There's always someone better.
Well, Peyton Manning, though. That's all I'm going to say. Like, well, if that guy's...
How old are Brady's kids?
I have no idea, honestly. Brady's kids, like, are they football prospects?
I want to say one... I want to say the one with Bridget Moynihan, I want to say maybe high school-y. Like, that's...
How many baby moms does Tom Brady have?
Two.
Okay.
Bridget Moynihan and then Giselle.
All right.
I don't know. The thing that annoys me about Baylor McCauley is, like, I have no problem with them doing what they're doing as being a football factory. Like, that's their choice. That's their prerogative. That's what they want to do. Have at it. They should not be allowed to compete at the same level.
Yeah, and I also just fundamentally disagree with the idea that at the high school level, athletics are the, quote, front door to the university.
No, I agree, but I think that's how they view it. I'm not saying...
No, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Like, I just wanted you to explain to me, like, what... Like, the point of view of the people who do this. Like,
all
I'm not
I know
saying
is, it is eerily similar when you go to these campuses. You're a little bit younger than I am, but you remember how the SEC arms race...
Why don't you just call me buddy or, like, big guy?
Well, no. I'm just saying, when you started covering it, you were probably... It may not have been as noticeable, but when I started covering the SEC, the arms race kicked up into a billion miles an hour. That was when you started getting the lazy rivers, the
miniature golf courses.
Yeah, the flight simulators. Like, it ratcheted up to 11. And now it's a little bit different there where, hey, they had to spend the money to make it look like they weren't making hundreds of millions of dollars. But it's kind of the same thing where it's like it rhymes with everyone building the next latest and greatest where you feel like it makes you – the best school.
Yeah, I guess for me, like, as a father of two now, like, I would look for, if I were looking, shopping around for a private high school, I would be looking at the academics, right?
That's all I looked at. That's all I care, like, about.
Get to college, okay? You want to go have the SEC experience? Great.
Well,
like,
thing,
that's awesome.
My whole thing is, like, but, A, I look at her, the size of me, and I look at the size of her mother. She's going to be vertically challenged. So I don't really know what that athletic ceiling is to begin with. And on top of that, it's like, if you're good, you're good. Like, using the aforementioned Mannings, they came out of Isidore Newman. It was like small private school Louisiana in the non-arms race era.
Which has always been the criticism of the Mannings. It's like, oh, well, they played against lower tier, you know, small classification private schools. Are they actually any good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
If you're good, you're good. Like, you know right. what I mean? Like, to a certain degree.
And now it's like you're going to get seen, even in football, which doesn't have AAU or travel ball, but now you have 7-on-7. Like, you're going to go to the elite camps, right? Like, that's where you're going to get your traction as a prospect.
I think the camp circuit is really where it is. Because now I've noticed this. College coaches are weary of game film. Have you seen this? That there's a lot of... There's been
AI?
A couple, yes, there's been altered game film. And so coaches now have gotten to the point where they don't know what to trust. Now, the other side of this equation is, I mean, the elite of the elite, yeah, they're getting recruited at high school. But the lion's share of rosters now are coming from somewhere else in college.
True.
You want the proven commodity.
Go to FCS, go to G5. Did you see that quote from Kurt Cignetti where he was basically like, I pull up their ESPN stats? Like, he Google searches a kid who's in the portal, looks at their stats on ESPN.com. This is, like, the most, like, caveman way possible to scout a guy. And I know he's got a personnel department that's diving deeper on these players. But, like, the fact that Kurt Cignetti is looking at their, like, very rudimentary ESPN.com player pages to get a gauge. Because literally, he's just looking for stats. He's looking for production.
Well,
and that's it.
So there's a couple things here. Obviously, one with Cignetti, I never know what's true. Because, like, Cignetti does... He does give me the Nick Saban myth, you know, like, all I do is watch the Weather Channel and eat my Little Debbies. It's like, I'm betting you do a few more things than that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think Cignetti has a little bit of that. But I've also wondered this. As we swing so far into analytics and looking for these hyper-specific traits, whether it be like a particular stat, a deeper stat that you're more into, like, is there actually a market for just going meat and potatoes-y? Like, just give me the big dudes. Like, give me the how many balls he catch? Cool.
Yeah,
like,
right. How much does he weigh?
Right, exactly. Height, weight, know. Like, what does he weigh? Like, how many balls he catch? How many yards he run for? Like, I almost wonder, like, if there is, like, have we swung so far that we are ignoring, we did keep these other stats for a reason. Doesn't mean that they were ever the be-all, end-all that they were made out to be, but it's like, we did keep them for a reason.
Yeah, you over-money bought, right? And then, like, yeah, I mean, you look at FCS and G6, like, a lot of these guys 5-10 years ago were getting recruited by Power 4 schools, like, players of their caliber. So, if they're
Hurd's
producing
telling,
at that level, you know?
And again, Hurd never tells his kids where to go, but Hurd has been very open, like, at a certain level, go play at the CUSA school. Go play at the Sunbelt school. Get your numbers and you'll get more money because they're going to pay you more.
Yeah, because you're going to ride the bench
at the
high major, the Power 4, whatever. Not get to show anything.
And his other argument is, he goes, and you'll play.
Right.
Now, I get it. There's lots of ways to do it, but that gets us to yesterday's news. So the 19th Circuit Judge in the state of Louisiana grants a temporary restraining order to 30 college athletes. I believe it was 15 college football players. So here were the things that I thought were interesting, Cobb. Number one, not that you ever really had to sell me. I'm 100% on board with you that right now, NCAA policy, the new policy, is designed to lose in court.
Disaster by design.
Correct.
Yes.
I'm one with you 100%. Now, before everyone goes, hey, wait a minute, how can you hold the idea that you think a lot of these administrators are dumb and operate very dumbly, and yet this would be a shrewd move? I don't think this is their call. I think this is the strategy of the people that they're hiring that I do think are smart. And are shrewd. And again, I feel like I've been here with you, but yesterday was, it never made sense. I remember when 5 for 5 came out, and I think you were on the show with me, and I was like, explain to me why they will not grandfather in the seniors, because it just made zero sense. You knew exactly what was going to happen. It was going to take 30 seconds before the lawsuit's in. I understand this idea if you wanted to draw a line in the sand, but it's like, that doesn't pass the smell test. this just to me, like, this is yet again evidence of this is the point.
Well, there are literally plaintiff attorneys who believe this. And I think that's why the sentiment has continued to exist out there, is because people are talking to some of these attorneys and they are trying these cases against the NCAA. And they're like, yeah, the NCAA basically rolled over and played dead here on purpose because they wanted the chaos that all this would bring. Why? So that the dialogue around the Protect College Sports Act doesn't die down, even though Congress is in a recess.
You can even talk me into this. That it's not 100% designed to make the Hail Mary that is the Protect College Sports Act go through, but it's designed to have, if that doesn't go through, then have the climate to where you can get legislation to go through.
Yeah, it's got to be the sense of urgency is what they're looking for. And now that it's creeped over into football, that's only going to increase here. But the football side of this is fascinating to me. One, most power conference, or most, I mean, shoot, any level of scholarship football is going to have, they're going to be pretty much right up against their roster limit at this point. So what are they going to do? Are they going to tell the seven or eight pseudo walk-ons to just go kick rocks, like, so they can make room for 5-for-5 guys? And then also, unless you've been in an NFL minicamp, or unless, I mean, I guess, I don't know, like, you've gone to work as a personal trainer in your post-college career, like, a lot of these guys who would be eligible under some of these lawsuits have not been working out at nearly the level that would make them relevant in an actual football game in 10 days. You know, like,
there's a little bit of an issue there. I've been told Xavier Harris is comfortably 30 pounds overweight.
Yeah. Like, it takes months. Like, it's these guys, they go through winter conditioning, right? And then they go through spring practice and they go through summer workouts and then they have preseason practice, which is grueling and conditioning oriented at a lot of places. So, I mean,
sometimes it's just as simple as this. Like, they're just not left to their own devices to go eat whatever they want.
Sure. I mean, I don't care who you are. You exit a college program, you exit a high school program, and you just go live normal civilian life. Like, your body's going to change, you know? I mean,
well, not only that, you just, let me tell you what 23-year-old dudes do. They eat fast food.
Yeah.
It changes your body.
And I know the idea is that, like, oh, you know, you were brought up in a strength program. You know how to work out. You know how to lift. But if you're 23 years old, you just exhausted your eligibility after being a high-level athlete for the last 15 years. Like, maybe some of you are going to keep grinding it out in the gym because it's all you know. But a big chunk of those guys are going to be like, all right, like, thank goodness. Like, I'm done. I can just, you know, go to the gym maybe twice a week, you know, and just play video games more and live my life. So that's my point on these 5-for-5 guys. Like, yeah, if you get some out of an NFL mini camp, they're going to be ready to go. Maybe you've had a few who continue to train, hoping that something like this would transpire. But to me, I find it really hard to believe you would be motivated to work out at the level you need to work out over a period of 6 months on the hope that there might be a Hail Mary court ruling that would maybe get you back on the field. So, like, I don't think this is going to have as big of an impact as we think it's going to, because, you know, first off, especially on the Power Four football level, like, if you weren't good enough to make a 53-man NFL roster, you're probably not going to make a huge impact on the field this year, especially within the context of a 2-deep roster, where unless you're a quarterback, and I don't see any great quarterbacks who are going to be back on field because of this, like, how are you going to make a big enough impact for me to?
I don't know if this was real. I saw people kicking around, and I didn't know if this was engagement farming. I did see someone kicking around the idea of Diego would come back.
Yeah, I think I don't understand the case behind that. That would be, can you imagine? Like, we've already gotten him for far too long. Like, he had a great career. He was fun to watch, but dude, come on.
I mean, I guess the argument would be the legal case said that the junior college didn't count against his clock. And he only played against one of those years.
5-for-5 though, like, under the 5-for-5 rule, it counts.
Does the 5-for-5 count? I get it. It is just a judge in Louisiana, but now I am at the point of saying, does this count?
So he was at New Mexico Military Institute for 2 years, New Mexico State for 2 years, Vanderbilt for 2 years. He's played 6 years.
Well, but what I'm saying is his TRO essentially said junior college was outside of the jurisdiction of NCAA. So therefore, his 2 years at New Mexico counted, and his 2 years at Vanderbilt counted. This would be 5-to-play-5.
No, because 5-for-5 is age-based. So it starts when you the year after you turn 19.
But we're already you see the complications. We've been grandfathering in other people that the age didn't matter.
If Diego Pavia comes back, I don't want to say something stupid, but like, I might actually like boycott Vanderbilt football. Like, I'm just not going to engage with it at all. Like, I'm just done. Like, Jared Curtis, like, come on. That dude signed for however many million dollars coming in smart
feet. Hear me out. Who said Pavia is going back to Vandy?
Well, this was going to be my first question.
Oh, gosh.
Put truth serum on Clark Lee.
He'd rather have Pavia.
Right?
Than a true freshman? Yeah, he'd rather have Pavia.
And gives you a little bit more time to season your true freshman? Now, now do you run the risk of pissing off true freshmen?
Especially a true freshman who was at first slated to go to Georgia for a crap ton of money, like he's getting from you.
You really going to put $10 million on the bench?
Well, he was going to sit at Georgia, which is part of the reason why he came to Vandy. Now he's going to have 5 years. Like,
that's
he
what I'm saying. But what
years.
I'm saying is, if you don't, I don't know if they're going to keep Jared Curtis. First off, we have no idea how good he is or isn't going to be. He's got all the tools to be great. But I do know if you don't play him, the likelihood of him continuing to play for you decreases. Contracts be damned.
Yeah, I mean, because at that point, Diego Pavia might come back for an eighth year.
I mean, listen, what's to stop another court ruling? Now, here's what I actually do find interesting. So, Pete Nakos at On3 mentioned the SEC memo that Greg Sankey sent out earlier this summer about intra-conference rules and intra-conference transferring. I will be fascinated. Like, for instance, where's Daquan Wright's loyalty? Is it to Ole Miss? Or is it to the position coach, the offensive coordinator, and the head coach that he played for, who's now at LSU?
It's a great question.
Now, here's the other question I got. Everybody got the money? Because these guys ain't playing. One thing I do know. These guys are not playing for free. Why are they trying to do this? Because they believe they're going to make more money in college than they will
anything else. Like
I'll even go so far as this. Kyle, maybe one or two of these guys had a chance to make the 53 man.
George, you still think you can make more playing college?
George,
huh?
Remind me, like right now, what like a fifth rounder? What, $500,000?
Yeah, probably. Mind you, and a lot of these guys that are in these positions are former UDFAs.
Correct.
And have bounced around a team to team in these practice squad spots. Now,
correct.
Can a bunch of them make 53-man?
Sure.
Absolutely.
But, and also, you could make the 53-man and then you cut week three.
There you go.
Like, so let's not act like this is altruistic from the player's lawyer's perspective. No, you're doing this because you think it's an opportunity to make money, which is fine. But just stop. Like, don't lie to me. So, A, do you have the money? B, is the money clean? Is it going to get through? And then the other question that you bring up is, like, roster spots. Now, I tend to think that there's probably three or four guys that, sorry to whoever those three or four guys might be, you're always expendable. Like,
yeah, somebody who's there because of daddy's money, right?
Or just, hey, listen, man, like, let's just say, like, the guy that, like, walked on because his buddy was a good player and he's a good hang, locker room guy.
Describing a situation that happened with Arkansas basketball the last couple of years. Yeah, no, exactly.
Great glue guy.
Exactly.
You'd love to have him around.
It used to happen a lot more frequently. Like, that was when we evolved from brother or dad getting a spot on the bench, like the coaching bench, that evolved to get the best friend or the cousin. The first time I saw it was, who was that? They called him Reggie Bush 2.0 out of Shreveport. Went to USC. I think we actually lost him. He played at Evangel. Feldman wrote about him in Meat Market.
Joe McKnight?
Joe McKnight. Colby Asternoe wound up on the Ole Miss on the Ole Miss roster because they thought that that was their ticket in. For all the Laramie Tunsil heat, Ole Miss Freeze did what a lot of people weren't willing to do. They gave a cousin a spot, and ironically, that guy wound up playing like a ton for them. Like, it was kind of viewed as like the token. He's just there for Laramie. And they gave Laramie's girlfriend a full ride. But nobody else was willing to do that. Do. Like, yeah. This is
they'll
like,
find a way. They'll find a way with these guys. Like, if they're good enough. And, like, from the Ole Miss perspective, could be a huge benefit here. Like, if they
That's what I'd say is, like, I know Ole Miss is taking heat. I'm not sure these guys are. Maybe Wynette is?
Well, so my question is, it's
Xavier's
gotten so convoluted.
Already, chosen to go to the actual portal.
I'm telling you, Cobb, I don't think these Ole Miss was getting filleted on this. I am not certain that that's where these guys are headed.
So I apologize for having fallen behind on the minutia of each court ruling, but the Louisiana ruling that you're referencing with these college football players in particular, it does open the loophole for them to transfer because not every one of these state level cases does. And that's the complicated
and this
part
is,
of it.
Well, this is where I find it actually interesting. So yes, it does. Also, apparently there's an SMU kid that's going to sue for the transfer portal never closing.
Whoa.
That would be fascinating.
At this point, why not? At this point,
I'm there, dude. I'm in hashtag content mode.
Like, week to week, let's just have
why
players
not?
Jumping teams.
Like, yeah. Listen.
College football is going to turn into a guillotine fantasy league.
Well, it's like, you know, everybody's ripping on Lenore Sellers because he doesn't have a class. And he's just, by the way.
Working at the driving range?
We need
Come
to find
on, man, that's awesome. I love it.
We need to find out if there's a way that we can, like, invest in Lenoris's golf game. Because let me
you
tell
you. You work at a driving range,
Let
man.
Me tell you what. That guy's ball striking is going up. Like, I don't care if you got a good swing, a bad swing. You just bang balls. You will learn. You'll find a swing. Yeah. We got to figure out if there's, like, a Calcutta or something we can get involved in. And get in on that and, like, invest. But, like, we got to figure that out. But it's like, everyone's ripping on Lenore Sellers. And I'm like, Joe Burrow, like, just straight up admitted in 2019. He's like, yeah, I don't have any classes.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
In this era, we're mad at a guy for having graduated and for doing an internship. I mean, if he actually shows up to the driving range,
why wouldn't he?
Big round of applause, man.
Hitting balls is fun.
I guess he's a sports management major. I guess that like checks the box of like a practicum assignment or something.
All I'm hearing is learning how to run a business.
You go.
That's all I'm hearing. But this is why I think what is potentially important. So the memo that Sankey set out was like, hey, we don't really care what the courts say. You can't take them in conference. Who's going to challenge it?
Yeah.
Because
I don't know.
One thing we've seen so far, schools got no problem suing the NCAA.
But do they sue each other, right?
Haven't been willing to sue the conferences yet. And why? You're way more scared of getting kicked out of the SEC than you are of getting in trouble with the NCAA. Because let's talk about the difference in check sizes.
Well, yeah, I also saw the Patriot League saying, hey, you can't take a fifth-year guy back. So, yeah, our league's going to really put their foot down. I understand the intra-conference thing. All right, if you're...
Well, and
Greg
also
Sankey,
there's
the
a legitimate
SEC,
question of can they say this?
Well, they can. Like, they could try to make their own rules.
Right, that's
it's
what I'm saying.
It's the same, like, as the NCAA can.
Can they enforce it?
Yeah, it's to your point. Would a school sue the league? Would Ole Miss, would LSU... If they
I was
going to
say,
right,
I actually think Ole Miss isn't the team.
Yeah, would LSU sue to get Daquan Wright eligible to transfer within the conference?
I think it has to be someone that you know the league can't do without.
Well, would LSU check that box?
I think so. Georgia would check the box. Bama would check the box. I think LSU would check the box. Texas would check the box.
I don't think you want to suppress the potential talent level
Correct.
Of one of your bell cow team.
Correct. Well, no. Here's what. It's a one thing I've learned from the President of the United States, the law doesn't matter. It's leverage. In the end, the SEC, like, why could Texas Tech go as far as they did against the Big 12 with Sorsby?
Because they had leverage.
They needed him. And if I'm, give me a good one to pick on.
Mississippi State.
All right, if I'm Mississippi State.
You needed me to say it. I understand.
If I'm Mississippi State, can I get away with this?
Probably not.
So that's what actually interests me is, A, to your point, I got no idea. The reality is there's going to be a lot of hoopla on this. I don't know how much on-field difference it makes. But what I am actually fascinated by is, did we create a battlefront that actually would drive the plot, which would be, at some point, the schools either going against the conferences or suing the conference?
Let's go.
Let's.
Hey, I'm ready. Hey, it's the ultimate litmus test for the SEC. Can they do this?
And well, to your point, it would also say, if they can't govern this, this is the first time where you sit there and go, hey, we know the NCAA can't govern itself and impose penalties, but so far the SEC and the Big Ten have been able to kind of keep everybody in line. Once this floodgate opens, see ya. And then that could actually be Super League territory. If we don't need the conferences anymore, let's reorganize and let's just do it for the most money. All right, let us take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little more actual ball. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
I'm ESPN. All right, Cobb, over at The Athletic, Joe Rexroad. I think we've had him on the program a decent amount. Former columnist at the Tennessean. All-around good dude. Also got a radio show in Nashville. As a columnist for the Tennessean, he came up with the 25 most interesting names in college football. And he tops the list with Kurt Cignetti. After that, it goes alphabetically. So we'll get into a few of the names that I think are of interest. But would you agree, the most interesting name or the most interesting character slash person in college football is Kurt Cignetti?
Well, on a certain level, he's already risen to the top. Like, he's already done the thing that makes him interesting, is, you know, reached the mountaintop with Indiana. So it's interesting. Like, can he sustain it? That is interesting. I don't know if that's the most interesting, though. I honestly think, like, Lane Kiffin might be the most interesting. I'm a little tired out of him. Like, he's, you know, but what's LSU going to be, I think, is probably a bigger question and line of intrigue than what is Indiana going to be. I think at this point, we know what Indiana's going to be.
So last year, there was definitely like a, that was cute, prove it. And my God, did they prove it. I still feel like in the back of everyone's mind, there's like, is this real? And so
yeah,
far,
that's why they're sixth. That's why they're sixth in the AP polls, because nobody believes it. Like, they still can't process.
So I actually have a little different thought. Here's the reason why I think it's six. Even though I'm a stockholder in Josh Hoover Enterprises, I think you feel better about the quarterback situations at the other places ahead of them. You may not love them, but you feel there's been proof of concept.
Yeah, but who was jumping for joy over Fernando Mendoza? Jumping for joy over Curtis Rourke?
I think I would argue this is why they're sixth. Like, to me, like, that has been the bump up. Last year they were 20th. This year they're sixth, and I think that if Mendoza's back, I really do believe in my heart of hearts they would be the number one team.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying about why people might think that about the Indiana quarterback situation. But Jeffrey, I'm of the opinion that Josh Hoover is every bit as good as Julian Sain and Gunnar Stockton. I don't think he's significantly worse than either of those guys. I'll give Dante Moore the edge. I'd give CJ Carr the edge. I'd give Arch Manning the edge. But, I mean, Gunnar Stockton's a good but not great quarterback. And, frankly, Julian Sain is as well. Like, everybody wants to assume the Ohio State quarterback is a world beater.
No, 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 no. Here's what I would say. I agree with you on Stockton, although maybe Stockton is new Bo Nix, where I'm just destined to be wrong. What I do like about Stockton is he is clearly a leader. He keeps it moving with his legs, tough as nails. Like, guy puts his body on the line, and he never beats them. And when he's had to make some big throws, he has. Like, he had to make a big throw against Tennessee to the outside with no safety help. But he functions in what they ask him to do. And I do think that that's more than nothing, especially in this version of college football. I view Sain differently. I think Sain's fatal flaw is he got used to living in a life without pressure. And the two games, basically, that he was under pressure, he did not handle it well. He drifted in the pocket. He did the move that we used to do on NCAA whenever you'd get a blitz, where you just try to run back as far as you can and then loop around and then eventually run up.
Hey,
and
it worked for Trinidad Chambliss in the playoff.
Got a little more wiggle. But Sain throws on time a lot, and he is lethally accurate. Yes, he does have freaks to throw to. I'm not denying that, but I think he's a good quarterback. Hoover, I definitely think that it's true this. If we're in camp, I think Hoover's going to flash more than the other two. But as somebody who's watched a lot of Josh Hoover, my guy doesn't always make the best decisions with the ball. And that is a prop. Like, that's the thing. It's like, that was the knock on Fernando, and they coached it out of him.
Yeah, you get him around better talent. You get him around better coaching. You get him behind a better offensive line. And you get him into a system that is not, you know, wholly dependent on your right arm. So, i.e. a system that has a little bit of a running game. All of a sudden, you look a lot better. Wow. It's like Dante Moore going from UCLA to Oregon. You know, you get around better people, you become a better person. You know, it's not rocket science.
So the other reason why I think I'm okay with it is I think post-Saban or Saban onward, the best coaches were the best assemblers of talent. I do wonder if we are pivoting back to, you got to have players, no duh. And by the way, the NFL draft bore it out. That was not just a scrappy team that played hard. They had talent too. But are we coming back to where the coaching's going to matter? Because the other thing that was always impressive when you watched Indiana play, how many times did you see like a busted assignment?
Very rarely.
It felt like never.
And they have coaching staff continuity as well. That's huge.
Correct. And like they always they're not getting dumb penalties. Like they're just, you looked at them, you're like, that's a well-coached team. And like, I do wonder if we're pivoting in this era where the talent is more spread out and you can't just stockpile the best guys and roll the ball out there.
This is the point I make on the basketball side, and I've made it for a couple of years now, why Penny Hardaway is a bit of a square peg in a round hole. It's the same in both sports, where when Penny Hardaway got the Memphis basketball job, the name of the game was talent acquisition, and it really didn't matter what your TV deal looked like or what your athletic department's bottom line looked like, because you weren't, at least in theory, supposed to be able to pay the players. So that opened up a program like Memphis with a face like Penny Hardaway at the helm to stockpile talent, which they did. Amazing recruiting classes, big-time five-star guys who went on to play in the NBA. So Penny was a really good fit, a natural fit, and a good hire at that time. Well, all of a sudden, the game changes. And, yeah, it is a lot more about your acumen as a coach. And so who is better in a living room, Kurt Cignetti or Penny Hardaway? Who has more cultural cachet? Obviously, it's Penny Hardaway. He's just a good old-fashioned, you know,
I think
dirt
I would,
underneath the toenails ball coach.
I think I would expand on your point, though. I think more times than not, we just think of it's like, who's the best scheme guy? I do think what we are seeing now is, like, who is the best manager? Because, like, everything you read or hear about Cignetti at practice is it's a lot of delegation. It's him sitting in the stands watching practice but having the coordinators basically run practice, and then he coaches the coordinators. But he is, like, present. I do wonder if it's, like, the all-encompassing, like, hey, you can't just have better players. Like, you got to have the whole operation efficient.
Exactly, yeah. The talent's pretty equal now, and the guy who can coach it up the best is going to have the best team, and that's the story for Indiana. It's less about your ability to be cooler than other programs in recruiting because, you know, the lazy river, the miniature golf course, nobody cares about that anymore. It's how much can you pay me? 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 And then, all right, we're going to break the tie. Two teams can pay me about the same. Three teams can pay me about the same. Okay, sure. Where can I play the most? Where can I win a title? Right? Like, the other things still matter. But in a world where Indiana is competitive financially, in a world where they have the best ball coach, it doesn't matter if Kurt Cignetti has, you know, very little in common with the players he coaches, right?
No, it
doesn't matter that he only did a brief stint under Nick Saban in terms of developing that recruiting reputation at the highest level, right? So,
well, and I mean, but, it also it's getting more and more NFL-y. And the other reason why I bring that up is, listen, it's not difficult when you try to pick the teams in the NFL that you think are going to go from worst to first. The first thing you look at is schedule. And then when you look at the teams that might fall back, you look at schedule.
You think Cignetti would ever go to the NFL?
I'd be surprised. This feels like they're going to pay him as long as they want to pay him. He's got it rolling. I can't see him in his mid-60s wanting to do that. I think if he has enough of a name that if he wanted to go that route, I think he would have earlier. As an assistant, I mean, obviously, that would have been. But the reason why I bring it up is one of the teams that I do like their schedule, but we are curious about quarterback, is Tennessee. And Joe includes in his list Faison Brandon. And I'm with, I've told George, I have felt for a while that this is how it's going to trend, and maybe I'll be wrong. But I do think he's going to wind up being the quarterback. Their schedule does set up that if they get, what, B-minus production out of him? Tennessee could be the team that we're talking about, like, oh, how did we miss that? And it's like, we'll look at the end of the year and be like, well, the schedule set up for him perfectly, and Brandon was better than we thought early. Because I do like the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think you could kind of make the same argument as it pertains to the most interesting players in college football. With Keelan Russell, with Faison Brandon, with Aaron Filo, maybe even at Florida. Some of these unknown quarterback commodities who are still technically at least trying to win a QB battle. And I would throw one more SEC quarterback into the most interesting conversation. I think Oklahoma's ceiling.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.